Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember. Yeah.
You do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know.
I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Wow.
Hello and welcome to the Abroad Japan podcast. Probably the best way of learning about life in Japan without actually being in Japan. I'm your host, Chris Broad, and we're joined, as always, by England's top Japan enthusiast, Mr. Pete Donaldson himself. Pete, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well. I've got my top off. I do not mind admitting, because it's very warm here in Stakhanov Towers. And I'm just looking out on a rather sunny day. This week in London's been a little bit strange. It doesn't really know what it's doing. It's sometimes hot, sometimes rainy, but always just a bit damp and smelling a little bit like a dog.
Oh, God. We had the highest recorded temperature in history this week in Shizuoka Prefecture, which is kind of in between Tokyo and Nagoya. I think it was 41 or 42 degrees Celsius, which is absurdly hot.
Oh, no. Well, there was obviously in, was it Death Valley in near Las Vegas?
Death Valley,
about
53
or 54. I mean, a ridiculous heat, isn't it? I mean,
what would that do to my iced coffee? What would it
well,
do?
It would melt in five seconds. Yeah, it would. It just wouldn't be around, would it? Incredible, really. It would just melt. Imagine
wouldn't be around.
Transporting butter through Death Valley. Great album. Great album. I hate people who do great album jokes. Great album, but I like it on this occasion because I'm doing it. That's how jokes work.
Should do it. Next time in America, I want to see it happen. But fortunately, where I am in good old Miyagi Prefecture in Sendai, it's pretty cool. It's kind of like 5 or 6 degrees cooler. They do call it the coolest prefecture in Japan. I'm not sure who calls it that. I've just heard like three people from Miyagi call it that. I think they've made it up.
Yeah.
But I think because they've got the Pacific kind of winds and the current from the Pacific, it kind of helps cool it down.
Right.
It's definitely noticeably cooler than where I used to live in Yamagata Prefecture. So I'm happy. Although it is still bloody hot, but we've got the gift of aircon. Though I'm in a bad mood, Pete, for the weirdest reason.
Right.
It's so weird. I don't even know if I should talk about it for the sake of my sanity. I have dreams, weird dreams, the weirdest dreams. And this morning I woke in a bad temper because I had a dream for some reason where I had bought an orange Ferrari, no less. I don't know why, I don't really know how. I don't remember that part of the dream. But what I do remember is I was trying to sell my orange Ferrari. I went to a car dealership. And in my dream, in this imaginary weird scenario, the car dealer was kind of the middleman. Mm. And you kind of sit around at the dealership while they try and sell your car to like potential customers. And this Japanese woman came in and she was very interested in the Ferrari. And we came to a price. I sort of said, look, I want to get rid of the Ferrari. I've got to buy some things. I need the money quick. I want to sell it for 700,000 yen, which is about $7,000, a steal by all accounts for an orange, bright orange Ferrari. But she just would not buy it, no matter how much I tried at these, like this incredible knockdown price for a Ferrari. I don't even know what model of Ferrari it was. It was just a Ferrari, which is usually like $200,000. Mm. But she just wouldn't buy it. And we finally negotiated a deal for 500,000 yen, $5,000. And when it came to signing the paper, she said, oh, I thought it was 400,000 yen, $4,000 we agreed on. And I said, no, it's 500,000. And she went, I'm not buying it then. And she walked off. And then I woke up and I was furious about this fucking Ferrari that I hadn't sold in my dream. What a weird start to my day. And it's all been downhill since.
It's a weird start to your day. And also, it's such a little tramp wanting an orange Ferrari. Pathetic.
Pathetic. I wouldn't even get one. What does that tell you?
Your little influencer dreams.
That's what it's all been building to.
Yeah.
7 years of hard work. 8 years of hard work.
I just want orange Ferrari. I want to live in a house with the other influencers in Brighton. I want to live in a big six-bedroom apartment and do shitty videos with my little friends. Pathetic.
Don't bully me for being an influencer.
Oh, I want a little fridge with some ice cold Red Bull in it, with some energy drinks, some Monster energy drinks in my little fridge. Oh, it's gonna be utterly tasteless. It's gonna look absolutely awful. But I'm gonna have a 20 grand gaming PC in a room with a fucking with a blanket on the floor, and that's my bed because I'm a teenager. But I've been given £1 million house, inexplicably.
That's a lot of pent-up frustration there finally coming to surface. What I like, you're definitely jealous, because I know you can't even drive, Pete.
I know.
If you did have an orange Ferrari, imaginary Ferrari,
would it
couldn't drive it anyway.
Are most Ferraris manual or automatic? Because I've got a real problem. People sort of go, look, when I start to learn to drive, I've had a few lessons in a manual, and the main problem was the effing clutch. There's no need in 2020 for cars to have manual clutch, manual gears. There's just no reason. So so I always think that the more premium the car, the more chance it is to have a non-manual gearbox, unless you're an absolute pervert. Maybe that's untrue, I don't know. But I just fantasize about the Ferrari doing all the work for me. By the time I learn to drive, Chris, the cars are going to be autonomous anyway, so they'll just get on with it.
There won't be any Ferraris.
Yeah, there won't be any Ferraris. Yeah.
No, I mean, my first car in Japan was a manual, the old Toyota Starlet, which you didn't see, unfortunately. That was a rickety piece of crap. But I loved driving it. And I sold it to my friend Yuki, Tiny Beer Yuki, for I think a token sum of 100 yen. And he did it up. I didn't talk about that. In the driving video, I talked about how I got the Toyota Starlet and I loved it, but the windows didn't work and the aircon was rubbish. But Yuki, who is quite well off and could probably afford a Ferrari by all accounts, he got the Toyota Starlet for 100 yen off me, and he must have spent like a few grand doing it up. He fixed the aircon, he fixed the windows, it was actually usable, and he loved it. It was his kind of fun car, he called it.
Oh, nice.
Because of the manual. So there is a place for manual transmission, even though 90%, I think, of cars sold in Japan are, in fact, automatic these days. People just like the convenience, right?
Good.
There you go. But I don't know what to make of my dreams, really. Mm. They're all very weird.
Well, you're
all very
odd. A man just trying to shift a ridiculously expensive sport car for less than he actually paid for it. There's got to be... if there's some psychologists listening, we'll probably be able to give you a bit more information on that. Or dream analyzers.
I think in a weird way, it kind of links into another thought I had. Before I came to Japan, right, I sold my worldly possessions. Mm. I sold all my stuff, all my possessions, computer, my little car, Vauxhall Vectra. and all my DVDs. It all went. And I sold most of that stuff at a boot fair, car boot sale.
Yeah.
What would you call that in America?
Yard
speak?
Sale. It's a yard sale. But what I like yard about... But they don't generally
garage,
do them...
Garage sale.
Garage sale. They don't generally... do them out the back of the cars, I don't think. But what I like about that is you did the car boot, because here in England we sell everything out of a car boot effectively.
And then you
boot it back up and go home. But what I like about that, your story is you sold all of your worldly possessions and the car boot itself. Everything's
sold
for sale.
My car boot.
Everyone's got
Everyone
a price.
Went that day. But at this this car boot sale, all my worldly possessions, to create a fund that I could use to live in Japan.
Yeah.
I had a collection of DVDs, right? About 120 DVDs. It was one thing I collected. Even though a lot of the DVDs were rubbish, I had a collection of DVDs nonetheless. It was cool at the time. And I priced them, I think, like £2 or £3 per DVD.
Yeah.
But people wouldn't buy them. People were coming up and I was saying, you know, £3 for Die Hard or, you know, something. And they'll be like, no, I'll pay £1. And I was like, come on, this is at least a £3 purchase, Die Hard with Vengeance. And they just wouldn't buy it. So I let them have it for £1. And I think that memory of selling all my possessions before coming to Japan, mixed with my clear influencer dreams of getting a Ferrari, created this image, it has created this dream. And that is how it came about. And if you are listening and you're a dream analysis expert, I would like to find out what the hell's going on in my head, because I haven't got the faintest idea.
Haggling's such a pain, and haggling's so rubbish, isn't it? At a car boot, that's part of the game. But anywhere else in your life, it's just like, just give me a fair price and I'll pay the fair price. I can't be arsed with haggling. Although I did get £20 off my £15 a month off my BT business line this month by going, come on. This is a ridiculous amount of money. Can you, can you knock
on.
Off a? Come on, you're being silly now. This is I've moved house and I am in a situation where I used to pay £250 every month plus VAT to make it £300 every month for a 15 megabit broadband line. That's 15 megabits down and 15 megabits up in the centre of town. Now I thought, well, look. There's no home broadband in town, in the centre of town, so that's just something I have to deal with. That's just something that I have to sort of go, look, that's the expense of living in town. You don't pay quite as much on the tube, you don't pay quite as much on transport, so you have to pay £300 a month for a decent, reliable broadband line. So I had this six or seven copper lines coming into my house. I move house, out of the sticks, and now I'm in a situation where I'm on like a broadband supplier. Now, this is home broadband, and I've been used to business broadband, which is A, reliable, B, never falls over, C, the upload speed is as fast as the download speed. And the package that I have got from an unnamed broadband supplier, it's not important who it is because they're all pretty much the same in the area, is poor. Like, just a little bit too poor for the £22 a month I'm paying. So, I'm keeping my BT line, and it's going to cost me even effing more. £380
good
per month for a 100 megabit line. It's a good line, but it's £380 a month. It's an obscene amount of money, but I've gotten used to the finer things in life, which is a 15 megabit line up and down, which I'm fairly certain is about what 5G can give us or 4G can give us. I hate to get technical, but that is just an obscene amount of money. We're not very well infrastructured here in London. We're just not.
Should have told them you were half of the Abroad in Japan podcast, Pete.
I need a smashing discount. Yeah, I need. Look, I can't be doing with latency, guys. It's very important that the Abroad in Japan podcast gives me the lowest pings or the highest pings. No, the lowest pings and the lowest latency.
Very true. And I hope it
don't
was
do
worth
a
it.
Gap. Hope don't do a big it. Gap. So it sounds like it wasn't money well spent. Like you're doing a big gap and then going, very true. Yes, yes. I'm enjoying the lack of latency on the line. Very true.
Oh, the difficulties. Mm. The difficulties of being a podcaster and influencer. Weird dreams and broadband connections. What a nightmare. Still, it could be worse. It could be worse, like the story from Drea from Chicago. Here we got a really interesting story to kick off today's podcast. And I'll read it out. Basically, something happened involving one of the podcasts playing while at their workplace. And it says, hi, Chris and Pete, a funny story for you. Every Friday evening, I teach a restorative yoga class. If you've never been, restorative yoga is a lot of lying around in gently stretchy positions for up to five minutes at a time. Sounds quite nice, actually. I could probably do with that. My main responsibilities as an instructor are to provide a space with dim lighting and soothing music, guide my students safely into the poses, and then let them drift off into la-la land. This past Friday, I arrived early, turned on the electric candles, connected my phone to the Bluetooth speaker system, and chose one of my yoga music albums from Spotify. I then headed back up to the front to check in on my students once they arrived. Both of my students arrived early to lie on their mats and get a bit of extra chill time before class as per usual. And when it came time for class to start, I headed back to the studio, and just before reaching the door, I happened to glance at my phone. I discovered that Spotify was not, in fact, playing the soothing music, but was instead playing broadcasting one of your podcasts through the studio speakers. As if that wasn't bad enough, I saw to my horror that it was none other than the pornographic clickbait episode.
Oh.
I don't remember now, what was in that episode.
We were looking at this email before we started, and we couldn't remember calling any of the show's pornographic clickbait. Turns out, we most certainly did.
I'm not surprised.
Yeah.
I don't remember what it was about, though. I remembered too late because I've been binging on your podcast. I had made a queue comprised entirely of previous episodes the day before. After the first song on the yoga album had ended, my queue kicked in. It skipped your podcast and it had been playing the entire time my students had been lying there. I quickly changed back to the chosen album and laughed nervously as I entered the room, apologising for the technical error. I was rattled for the entire class. I'm not sure what they heard, and I refuse to go back and listen to find out, but seeing as how neither of the ladies came to the front to make me aware of the situation, I can only conclude they were either A, paralysed by their embarrassment, or B, lying in the semi-darkness, being so thoroughly entertained by the podcast that they didn't want it to end. I like to think it was the latter, and you'll soon have two new listeners thanks to my blunder. I'll never know. I was too mortified to ask. Many thanks, guys. Drea from Chicago. I love the image of two people trying to do some restorative yoga to this relaxing, ethereal music, and then your voice comes on, rah, 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 and then I come on, rah, 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 and it just ruins everything.
Stretch out your legs. Now roll onto your back. Now, have you ever been to Akihabara and done the go-karts?
Yes.
Poor Dre from Chicago. I like Friday chill out yoga at the end of a really heavy week of stress and strains. Women and men just wanting to just relax and enter the weekend with a clear frame of mind, and you know, and you know, to give yourself that kind of breathing space to kind of relax for the weekend, so you can appreciate the time off you've got. Hello. I'm a dickhead from London. Hello, I'm a dickhead who lives in Tokyo.
You've deconstructed not only the podcast, but both our personalities so brilliantly and swiftly.
Poor Dre.
I'm hurt. I'm hurt. But well done, Dre.
Yeah.
And well done. Be sure to make that mistake again.
Yeah.
Get some more free advertising.
Review us on iTunes, please. Five stars.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over 3 glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember. Yeah.
You do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast snook? And my dad was thinking of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? Mine's pretty low after coming back from the craziness of WrestleMania, too many body slams and all that. And I'm pretty jealous of my co-host Chris, who seems to have been exploring Japan's most isolated hotel. He's definitely winning in the relaxation race, but I'm determined to catch up with him. It can be easy to get swept up in social gatherings and spread ourselves too thin, but with therapy, you can learn to prioritize your time and recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online and designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/Japan today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Japan.
Jackmate's Happy Hour is back for a brand new season. It's the podcast where we talk to some of the most exciting people in the world, from Ricky Gervais.
In some ways, fame makes you a better person. You know, it's like, I don't believe in God. I don't believe in God's watching me. But I know someone with
everyone else's.
To undercover police officers.
Can you see the fading scar there, gentlemen?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
That's where I was stabbed in the neck by a drug dealer once.
Or we just talk about whatever's making us laugh right now.
When you think back to school kid banter, like, it's well funny because of how immature it is. We had this teacher called Mr. McGibbon, and he had this big cushion that he was teaching us how to rugby tackle on. He just ran up to it, rugby tackled it, but landed on top of it, and one of the kids shouted, "It's not your wife, sir."
That is funny.
Listen to Jackmate's Happy Hour on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods.
Jackmate's Happy Hour is a Stakhanov production.
Now, this week, there was a grisly discovery in Japan's kitchen. Do you know where Japan's kitchen is, Pete? Do you remember?
Is it in the pantry? Is it in the belfry? I believe it's Osaka, because that's where a lice food
Correct,
comes from.
Yes. Osaka is known as Japan's kitchen. I'm not really sure why. Because as far as I could tell, there's only like two or three dishes there that are unique, including takoyaki and okonomiyaki. Either way, there was a lot of bloody good food. But it was a rather grisly discovery. It involved the bones of 1,500 people found at Osaka Station near a construction site. Osaka has a very big station in the Umeda area. Apparently, it used to be a huge burial site, and lots of people buried there. And I think while they were clearing the area for some new development, which probably Osaka doesn't need, Osaka's been so damn heavily developed. It's like one big concrete jungle. They're pulling up the ground and they just found huge grave with loads of bodies. And you can look at the photos. It just looks rather grim, actually, because you've got these huge skyscrapers, huge built-up skyline, and then just this pit, this big, huge pit filled with bones. It looks rather sinister and shady. But, apparently, that part of Osaka was a place where people got buried and a rather big burial site.
Well, it looks like it kind of the corpses, the bodies could be as young as 1912. Apparently, the first 20 years of the Meiji period.
Oh God,
the cemetery was still in active use. So it's not. It looks like quite old. I mean, mass burials. It's very, you know, we obviously London. You can't. Dig anywhere without finding a mass grave simply because so many people died during the plague. But plague pits all around London, whenever there's a larger engineering project than just putting in a new doorway in the London Underground, they usually just find more and more bones because obviously it's where all of the plague pits were. But they seem to be pretty well mapped now, and obviously with X-ray technology. But if you're not looking for it and you just come across just endless, oh, there's a bone, there's a lot of femurs in here. What's going on here? And imagine how. I know builders and kind of like excavators must see this sort of thing all the time, but nothing can prepare you for that scale of human burial. Incredible, very interesting.
I think it's not the first time either. Back in 2017, I think they uncovered the remains of 200 people. Also, not too far from there, lots of burial sites in Osaka, it seems.
Yeah,
not sure why. Probably because it was historically, it was a massive city. I remember reading the story of William Adams, Samurai William, the British dude who came to Japan in the, I think, early 1600s and became a samurai. And in the book that I read about him, apparently a lot of foreign travellers who passed through Osaka were absolutely in awe of the city in the 1600s because it was so well developed and these really sophisticated sewage systems, and the streets are very clean and pristine compared to Europe, which was one big cesspit. So Osaka 400 years ago is supposed to be quite a nice place, apart from the constant battles that went down around Osaka Castle, of course. I'd love to go back and see what it looked like old Japan from the kind of the Edo era and the kind of 400 years ago. It looked beautiful, but unfortunately, because it all got burnt down, bombed or removed, or collapsed. There isn't that many old kind of towns around these days. Bits and pieces of Kyoto, for sure, and Kanazawa. There's quite a nice place in Takayama in Gifu Prefecture where you can see kind of quite a well-preserved town. But it's a shame. It's a real shame that that kind of history has been lost.
Well,
is now being rediscovered under the ground.
Well, I think, and then developed on. I think the Japanese have historically, in the last certainly 30 years, been quite sort of cutthroat about their previous sort of generation sort of stuff. Like, I think there's through Shibuya, there's like this river that they just filled in because they just built on it. I think Tokyo Hands runs above a river. They just went, oh, fuck it. Let's just, you know, this is the centre of town now. Let's get rid of this river. It's a waste of space. Let's build a shopping centre on it.
Well, there's a really good book, actually. It came out about 10 years ago called, I think, Dogs and Demons of Japan. And it's kind of like they talk about some of the sad aspects of Japan, like the construction boom that happened in the 1960s and onwards. Yeah. And Tokyo, as you say, it was actually like a Venice. They called it, I think, a few hundred years ago, they called it like the Venice of the East because it was just so many rivers. And you can kind of see them and find them as you walk around Tokyo, but most of them have been concreted over. And when the Olympics came up in 1964, in the 1960s, I think, and they quickly built up Tokyo and concreted over a lot of the scenery, a lot of the landscape, a lot of the rivers. And Tokyo lost a lot of its history as a result. So I'm not surprised by that. And it's a real shame. But this book is fascinating. I think Dogs and Demons of Japan, talking about how the government works with construction companies and it's kind of changed the face of Japan in for the worse in many ways. And I think like 50 or 60% or more of Japan's entire coastline has been concreted, which it's completely believable for me because I've seen huge chunk of Japan's coastline. It's just concrete everywhere. Yeah. Even on the west coast where there's not that many things like tsunamis, just because they wanted to keep employment rates up. So the government just gave loads of money to infrastructure projects to try and keep employment rates up. But unfortunately, the end result was they terraformed a lot of the country and a lot of the countryside in ways that they didn't need to. But really interesting book.
I mean, you look to the East and great engineering projects have historically always been one of those things that have kept politicians in power. So I think any local politician who's sort of going, right, we're going to basically cement the fuck out of the coastline, it's a big two thumbs up because it looks like you're doing something. We were talking, I don't know if we talked about it last week, but certainly the great spectre in China, in near Wuhan, is the Three Gorges Dam. Obviously this massive engineering construction project a little while ago that was apparently supposed to apparently it's so big it affects the turning of the entire world because it is so large, and obviously it keeps a body of water obviously to a very small amount, but it keeps a body of water away from another body of water, so it's kind of obviously controlling that, and I'm fairly certain it either slows or speeds up the earth, and if it fails it will kill millions of people in Wuhan, the plucky lucky Wuhan again, and also it will actually shift tectonic plates because it's that big an engineering project. But obviously this sort of style of engineering projects has always been historically very important to Chinese leaders. You see these kind of like big kind of engineering projects and it keeps people in power. But the sad thing about this particular dam is it was graded for like 1,000 years. They're sort of saying this is going to be here for 1,000 years. They've downgraded it to 100 years because it looks like it could break at any minute. And the rains this year have obviously been incredibly excessive. Japan's had its own taste of it as well. This dam, if you get the same level of rains next year, it's probably going to break, and it's probably going to displace or possibly kill a lot of people in Wuhan, and obviously instead of taking this threat seriously and acting accordingly and maybe dialing down the amount of power that that dam creates, the Chinese government are doing what they usually do, just shutting everyone up about it, blocking people talking about the Three Gorges Dam and stuff like that. So there is a situation where where these kind of engineering works are so important and so necessary to politics on a national scale, but also, you look at Boris Johnson during his tenure as London Mayor, he's talking about new bridges, like garden bridges, and his adoption of the Ken Livingstone bike. Became the Boris bike. These sort of things do stick around. The buses that Boris, the new route masters that Boris brought in. These things really cement your legacy as a politician.
They're visual, aren't they?
Yeah, they're very visual.
They're very visual.
Visceral. So,
indeed.
Yeah, it's interesting.
I mean, the Japanese countryside is crisscrossed with highways that have been half built. I remember driving down a very small countryside road in my first few months arriving here.
Yeah.
And the countryside road suddenly turned into like a two-lane like highway. And then it just ended about 1 minute later in a forest. And there was absolutely no need for this highway. It was just there to transport people to nowhere. But it's really common. And one of the main reasons is the Japanese government, I think, for what I understand, gives out huge amounts of money. And if the local authorities, the local area, don't spend their budget, they get a smaller budget next year. Mm. So they're kind of incentivized to spend all the money they get, and they don't know how to spend it. So they spend it on giant roads and highways or dams and kind of blocking over the sea.
Chris, let's not forget the moody little four-fingered hand of organized crime in Japan. Lot of that floating about. Lot of that.
But I recommend the book, even to you, Pete. I think you'd like it. Dogs and Demons, Tales from the Dark Side of Japan by Alex Kerr.
Are you saying it's got no pictures in it?
It's a really good book. It's got no pictures. There's no pictures of dams or the Three Gorges Dam. Hopefully you'll still enjoy a ruddy good read of it.
Mm.
And in slightly more happy news, I think last week we talked about the fantastic video from Komazawa Isolation, a YouTube channel. They mimicked a Japanese Yakuza game, the Yakuza game series, and GTA in Shibuya. The guy running the channel kind of walked around Shibuya in the style of like a video game character, and they filmed it in such a way. It's so well done. But this week they released part two, continuing the epic tale as they walk around Shibuya having awkward interactions with lockers and people and fights. Have you seen it at all, Pete?
I've not seen the follow-up yet, but I'll have to fill my hungry eyes with it when we finish. What's he up to? What's he up to this time, Chris?
Not a whole lot. It's quite just walking around Shibuya. Right. He kind of walks up to a guy who's sitting next to some lockers and just asks him if they need to just go on some sort of quest. They go up to a locker. They open the locker. They go to Yoshinoya. Sorry, not Yoshinoya. Matsuya. Matsuya, the gyudon restaurant. And he orders some gyudon to repair his health before having some sort of quick fight in the street. It's pretty cool. I have to say, it's one of the best done kind of GTA recreations I've ever seen. So check it out, Komizawa Isolation, which is a tongue twister. And I would urge you to just type in Japanese video game Shibuya into Google and it'll come up.
Have a peek.
Check it out. It's amazingly done. And with that, we turn our attention to the fax machine this week. What do we got this week inside the fax machine, Mr. Dawson?
We've got an email from Balazis. Hello, Balazis. Hiya, Pete and Chris. Chris, I'm interested in your experience with light pollution in Japan. Since you lived in the countryside for years and cycled across the country as well, I hope you can shed light on this topic. How bad is it over there? Obviously, all the streetlights in big cities will totally obscure the night sky. London is abysmal in this regard, so don't expect Tokyo or Sendai to be any different. But how about the more rural areas? One of my life goals is making a backpacking hike across the country, and I'd love to know what to expect in terms of stargazing far from population centres. Thank you, and do keep up the great work, guys. Balazis!
I think if you go to Tokyo or kind of East Japan, like Sendai, Nagoya, Kyoto, Osaka, you are going to have trouble seeing the sky. I can see it a little bit some days, but not that well. However, on the West Coast of Japan, there's not that many big major cities, and that is your best bet to see the night sky. Or from Central Japan, when you're surrounded by mountains. But certainly anywhere near the Tokyo area is quite tricky, which is unsurprising given there's 36 million people and a heck of a lot of lights in the area. Have you ever seen the stars from Japan, Pete?
No, I don't think I ever have. Maybe that hotel that we stayed in the bum bum end of nowhere in sort of Sendai, about half an hour from Sendai, I think.
Oh, Ishinomaki?
Yeah, Ishinomaki. I think I may have seen some stars there. And obviously we went out quite early in the morning to go fishing as well. I think I spied some stars late in the night there just before dawn. It was lovely.
I think if you're outside the major cities, it's right. You can see some stars, but it's never going to be anywhere as near as good as like a desert or anywhere like that. But give it a whirl. Let us know. Kelby from Colorado says, "Hi, Pete and Chris. I have a fun story from my first trip to Japan, which was January of this year. Me and my two friends who went with me were walking down a street near the Shinjuku Metropolitan Government Building, which has fantastic views, by the way. And we saw a man flailing his arms around underneath a bridge. The funny thing was that whenever he did this, the wind would blow. And when, and when he stopped spinning his arms around, the wind would stop. We stopped to watch for enough time to establish that this man indeed was making the wind. I don't know what kind of Japanese magic this man possessed, but it's but it certainly made us reconsider everything we knew about the weather. Maybe you guys could tell me more about this wacky phenomenon. Kelby from Colorado, USA. P.S. I've attached some photos of me enjoying Coolish. Thanks, Pete. And there's a photo of Kelby enjoying some Coolish. And perhaps Kelby had too much Coolish, because I have no explanation for this wind-making man in Shinjuku. Any theories, Pete? You're well-placed.
I would argue he's probably reacting to the wind rather than... I would say that he's probably he's more of a wind turbine than a god. He's probably reacting to it. He's probably sort of pretending he's the god of wind, but he's not. He's a man under a bridge. But I would like to congratulate Kelby from Colorado, USA. Clearly a man who lives in Colorado, because he's a man who's outdoors. It seems quite chilly. He's got several layers on and I think gloves as well. And yet he's still enjoying an iced treat, and it's vanilla flavor, which is the only flavor. It's vanilla flavor as well, which is the only flavor you seem to find when it's during the winter months. They do push the boat out when it comes to summertime. So well done, Kelby. That's great stuff.
Taking it to the next level. And indeed, if you ever see a guy waving his arms around, controlling the wind, ladies and gentlemen? Please let us know. I would like to hear some more on that. Although a lot of people do exercise, I find people over 50 in Japan do a lot of arm swinging when they're like doing running or exercise around and about outdoors. So that could be it. As to the controlling of the wind, well, I'm not quite sure. I can only speculate. We got one from Edward. Edward Fitch. Over to you, Pete.
Hello, Edward. Hiya, Chris and Pete. Thanks for making the podcast twice a week now. Love it. I love all the videos. The recent video about driving in Japan, the aerial shots were breathtaking. So excellent work, guys, as usual. Yes, thank you. I worked very hard on that the driving in Japan video. Anyway, I stopped off at a cafe this afternoon in Charlton Park in London, which is run by a Japanese mother and daughter. I was very excited to use my pidgin Japanese. I found out they are from Chiba, and as a long-time viewer, I checked the Abroad Japan website for videos. Alas, to my dismay, it appears you have only been here once, and that was to watch the first video I ever watched of yours visiting Japan. 5 reasons why it will be awesome. So I was wondering if you ever have any plans to film in this area, as it is far more interesting to watch your videos than just Googling away. Keep up the amazing work, and I look forward to your next releases. Set from my iPhone. Regards, Edward Fitch. Ooh, Edward's got an iPhone. Chris, I always plan to go to Chiba because that is where the Tokyo Game Show takes place. But in my many trips to Japan, I've either just slept in or just I've got press tickets to it and I never actually attended it. So apologies to the organisers of Tokyo Game Show. I don't know what the hell would be going on there because I've never been.
I think there's a place. You know what? Chiba is kind of seen as a dead end area. There's nothing for a lot of it. It's just a big flat plain, only known for Narita Airport, and that's not something to get particularly excited about. There is one place I'm quite interested in called Jigoku Nozoki, literally the peek into hell, which sounds rather ominous. Wow. And it's a kind of a cliff top with a very dangerous looking edge that dangles out. But they've got lots of they've got like a really cool Buddhist temple there. And if you've ever seen the Top Gear episode where James May and Richard Hammond race Jeremy Clarkson across Japan from Kanazawa over the Alps and into Tokyo and into Chiba, they end it there. And it's kind of really cool, like a nice mountain, cool temple, but the cliff just looks incredible. So check that out. It's called Jigoku Nozoki, Nozoki in Chiba. And that is the only thing that I can think of or that I know that's probably worth checking out. Oh, and Disneyland. Disneyland.
Disneyland, yeah. And Disneyland. I've just been looking up the Tokyo Game Show 2020. It says say online, so maybe it's not going to be an in-person experience. But that's usually in Chiba. The theme this year is the future touches gaming first. I like that a lot. That's very fun. Very fun. One day I will get to the Tokyo Game Show. One day Chris will go to the Tokyo Game Show and have a bit of fun.
I would love to go. I nearly went. I turned an offer down to go there once and I regret that. So we'll go next year.
Next year. Let's do it.
And then we'll go to the gates of hell, whatever it's called, the peak into hell. We'll go to Disneyland. It'll be the perfect trip to Chiba.
Beautiful.
Keep the stories, questions, comments coming into abroadinjapanpodcast@gmail.com. We'll be back in the next few days to do it all over again on Wednesday. But for now, guys, no matter where you might be, out there in the big wide world, many thanks for listening and we'll see you then. Take care and have a good one.
Bye-bye.
This was a Stakhanov production and part of the Acast Creative Network.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces
three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember. Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit. And he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.